This is the Best of the Adam Gold Show podcast, brought to you by Coach Pete at Capital Financial Advisory Group. Visit us at capitalfinancialusa.com. This is the Adam Gold Show.
I'm going to give State fans some props here in a second. State gets Carolina, Duke, and Clemson every year. Carolina gets...
Those are State fans.
No, actually, here's what's...
They get to play Clemson every
year. Surprisingly, we haven't played it out yet, so maybe that will change. But surprisingly, State fans have been like, yeah, bring it on. See, I'm going to... I am him. Dennis Cox on the ones and twos. Said this earlier. I have been very, very impressed. Wolfpack fans all in on playing Clemson. We are going to discuss the 3-5-5 format with my friend, the one and only Chip Patterson, who joins us every Wednesday. I missed you last week. I was busy being dad to a young soccer player. So thank you very much for doing this again. What's going on?
Not a lot. I'm kind of with you that if I cannot put myself in the shoes of an NC State fan, but what I can acknowledge that the absence of division play, even if you're still playing Clemson every single year, has removed the roadblock that would be Clemson or, you know, in 2012 or 2013, Florida State. And so, hey, like, if you've got to play Clemson, the best thing that you could hope for is that you get a rematch in the ACC championship
right.
game, because the rest of it sets up so that you can be, even with a loss to Clemson, the second best team in the ACC.
All right. There's a bunch of things I want to get to about this, and we'll get back to what 3-5-5 means. Did anybody get
3-5 or the 3-5-5? Are we talking Gary Patterson defense? I mean, it can get really confusing.
3-5-5. We work from the, basically the blue line out. We work from the back line, then we go to the midfield, then we go to the forwards. Nobody plays a 3-5-5 anymore. First of all, that's illegal. But we'll get to the scheduling format in a second. We know that the Pac-12 just completely scrapped divisions this year. The ACC isn't doing that yet. Do we think that this is going to be the plan across the country?
Yes. I think that for the SEC, they are just going to hold tight until they get Texas and Oklahoma on board,
right.
And then they will take on a 3-6-6 rotation to be able to handle their 16-team conference. And as we look to the Big Ten to be able to be the next in line, remember, the Big 12 has no divisions. They already right. have a round-robin schedule. I don't expect they will go to division play, but we will slowly but surely see division play phase itself all the way out. My big takeaway from a national perspective is that the ACC has only committed to this through 2026.
Right.
2026, is that when the new college football playoff? Have we learned our lesson of scheduling out to 2036 when it's 2016? Have we learned our lesson of scheduling out 20 years in advance? And now we are just going to take this bite by bite. I heard Dennis mentioned earlier on the show that these could change, right? These are going to be your primary opponents, at least through this edition of the scheduling model. I think that cutting this off at 2026 is very sharp, because you want to adjust if you need to, if there's an entirely new college football landscape.
You should always give yourselves the flexibility to adjust. That's why scheduling these things out forever is never a good idea. If you had to stack the ACC this year, and obviously we're just guessing, but if you had to say this team will finish first, this team will finish second, who would be that team first, and who do you think that team would be second?
Clemson one. Is it based on conference schedule or based on...
You can base it on whatever it is Chip Patterson wants to base it on. You can base it on uniforms. Best uniforms. No, I don't care.
Clemson 1, NC State 2, Miami 3, and then when we get to 4, I think I take Pitt.
Okay.
But if
what you say is correct, and I tend to agree with you, then it would set up a possibility in the future, just not now, for Clemson and NC State to have a rematch, a Textile Bowl rematch, at the ACC championship game if this were next year as opposed to this upcoming year. And I think that would be better. So the follow-up to that, because I heard the Joes talking about this with Bubba Cunningham yesterday, would this be better or worse for getting multiple teams into even a slightly expanded college football playoff?
This is going to be better because it's going to provide a quality opponent that if you are on the cutting board, if you are, this is going to do so much more than putting 62 on the board against Virginia. This is going to do so much more than underwhelming against a Georgia Tech or whoever comes out of the Coastal Division. And I apologize because I understand that the Coastal Division does hold the most recent ACC championship. Panthers getting it done.
Yes.
Traditionally, I mean, from 2009 until 2021, it was a Florida State or a Clemson Atlantic Division winner that we had. So I'm mostly looking at this through the Clemson FSU, you know, viewpoint, but at the same time, I can say that those matchups felt like don't screw it up.
Right.
You know, it never felt like it was the kind of opponent on conference championship Saturday, aside from, you know, when they did go with one division, it was Clemson and Notre Dame. And guess what? They both made the college football playoff.
They did. But Notre Dame, I believe, was undefeated, right, at the time.
So
here's where I think it actually, because what I said earlier was it depends on the season whether or not it would be good or not. A 10-2 NC State team that takes a third loss in the conference championship game is probably not getting in, the way I look at it. But a 10-2 state team that misses out on a conference championship game might get in. So I just think it depends on the season. I think it's a neutral. I don't think it benefits you. It can, but I think it could also hurt you. So I think it ultimately is a neutral for me as to whether or not it helps you get an extra team in the playoff.
I think it guarantees your champion gets in. I think providing a quality opponent for the conference championship, and the fact that you mentioned the, you know, 2-loss, 3-loss scenario. If we are truly going by, you know, winning percentage, there is a potential that there could be a team that goes 1-3 in the non-con, but then gets white hot in conference play, wins all those games, and we have a 3-loss team in the conference championship. We are far less likely with no divisions to have conference championship contenders that have 3, 4, even 5 losses. I mean, was it Georgia Tech went 7-7 a couple years ago,
right?
Thanks to its own record and how it ended up losing in the conference championship game and losing its bowl game after that. I think that it is more likely that your champion is going to be in the college football playoff. We mentioned the expected expansion of the college football playoff. If it's a close game, if both teams are quality, then you are going to have a result that should provide not just your champion, but also your runner-up, a decent shot to be able to go play in the playoff.
Chip Patterson, as always, on Wednesdays. All right, so we now have the three of the 3-5-5. So these are, I think Dennis called them primary opponents. So you'll play these teams every year. Is there a team there that caught a break? Is there a team there that got hosed for whatever reason that you can see?
Pitt. I think that Pitt getting Boston College, Syracuse, and Virginia Tech is favorable. Virginia Tech could be a monster. You know, like we're looking at Virginia Tech as it is currently in turmoil under Justin Fuente. And I believe that Brent Pry, a Virginia native,
I know,
who basically took down the Justin Fuente regime by recruiting all the best players out of Virginia and bringing them up to Penn State.
Right.
I mean, I was talking with our friend Will Brinson about this yesterday. Like, the easiest athletic director move ever is like, hey, what happened with Virginia Tech football? They weren't doing good on the recruiting trail. Players were leaving the state. Where were they going? Penn State. Okay, let's go get the recruiter who's in charge of Virginia and let's stop all these players from leaving.
Right.
So that could turn a little bit, but on its face, I had really highlighted Pitt, Boston College, Syracuse, Virginia Tech. I understand that we, in a lot of cases here, we're putting some of the old Big East foes back together, but I thought that that was a favorable draw. The thing that made me laugh the hardest is actually on the Virginia Tech side, because I said, what is the history between Virginia Tech and Wake Forest? What in the world outside of, and then it came to me, I don't know if you've mentioned it, but it's Frank Beamer with two arms in the air and a 0-0 on that scoreboard. But they're also campuses are 90 minutes apart, and Virginia Tech does travel. That was from a, I mean, it's not good for Wake Forest to say we're excited that one of our primary opponents will travel to come, but it's good for Winston-Salem hotels. It's good for the gate. It's good for the concessions. So I kind of saw that one as one of the few truly geographic moves. I was surprised, speaking of geographic, that Florida State did not get Georgia Tech, as Georgia Tech is the closest campus in the ACC from Tallahassee. So that one was a little bit of a shocker, especially when you're trading them out for Syracuse. But, you know, other than that, I think that everybody got a decent, you know, across your three, you're going to have one or two that you're excited about and one that might not make as much sense for the most part.
I think for just to kind of peel that back, I think they probably gave Georgia Tech the break there because Tech has Clemson and Louisville as their other two. So to give them, theoretically, Louisville should be a top half of the league football program. We know where Clemson is, and Florida State should be a top, like, no worse than third. Right?
If you do that, then you're putting them against three programs that, like, you are Georgia Tech already fighting an uphill battle when it comes to big-time college football, and you are handing them programs that are built to win at a high level, or at least willing to spend it in Clemson, Florida State, and NI Louisville.
Yeah, the only way Georgia Tech should be good is because they are based in a hotbed of college, of high school football. It's a great environment for college football in the state, for high school football rather in the state. But there are so many academic requirements that are so difficult for Georgia Tech, and you're competing, you know, with all the other SEC and ACC schools that recruit that area. It's just hard. I just don't know how they're going to do it. So I kind of think they were throwing Georgia Tech a bone. But Florida State's already got Clemson. We think Miami should be good too. So, and then they throw Syracuse at them. And the days of Syracuse being good in football, I think, are just long gone. It's just no,
for a long time?
Yeah, I think they're long gone. I mean, it's unfortunate. You know, I'm significantly older than Chip Patterson. People, I mean, like, I might be 40 years older than Chip Patterson, for all I know. I grew up in an era. Why are you laughing?
40?
I may have just made up a number.
Don't let the youthful exuberance and the high-pitched voice fool you.
So, but I grew up in an era, and it's actually, it was still going on when I moved here in 98, where Syracuse was good. You know, going back to the Don McPherson as a quarterback era, Dick McPherson as the head coach, Donovan McNabb was obviously a pretty good football player at Syracuse. They were good for a while, but they just can't be good anymore today. There's just not enough of the talent is staying in the North. Syracuse as a place has been basically forgotten by enough. I know they were good a few years ago, but it was a mirage. And we all knew it was a mirage. I think it's just going to be really tough. I just think
it's
that...
It's still a basketball school, though, right? I mean, shouldn't we treat them with the same...
Yeah, but it used to be year in and year out a good football program. Right. But, you know, I grew up in the 70s and 80s, and Syracuse was good in football. Because that the Northeast actually played good football. You know, Boston College was routinely good. Penn State was routinely good. Those schools all recruited in the same general areas, and it was before big money and all of this. Remember, there was a time where the ACC paid out more money than the SEC. That also was during the lifespan of my time on radio in Raleigh, North Carolina. Is there something you would have done different with 3-5-5 and the way they've done it?
No, I think ultimately the real balance of this scheduling model is the fact that you're not going to have these drastic swings in terms of the conference schedule on a year-to-year basis, because you're going to play everybody.
Right.
Like 5-5, it pretty much guarantees that you're just going to face a wide swath. It's going to be changing out. I really like the idea that we have changed the math on who has the easiest and toughest schedules. I just turned in a feature for CBS Sports. It'll be posted here, you know, by mid-afternoon, ranking the toughest schedules in the ACC. And it is such a simple activity to start because you just look at the cross-division opponents. Everyone's going to play the same division opponents, but the cross division opponents, who avoids Clemson and NC State? Your schedule's easier. You know, who draws Clemson and also has Notre Dame rotating in on the schedule? Your schedule's harder. And I think that this will at least create a lot more diversity where it will be much less easy to understand looking at the entire conference who has the easier and tougher schedules, because it'll be so much more diverse without the monotony of division play.
All right, let's take a quick break. We'll come back. I want to ask you about how this might lead them to scheduling changes in basketball if they're thinking about these things. And we'll also talk about ACC headquarters. I want to bring this up with you. And then if we have time, and of course we will, we'll talk about what's going on at Pumpkin Ridge starting tomorrow. Next. Adam Gold in studio with my friend Coach Pete DeRuiter with the Capital Financial Advisory Group. We are talking retirement. Coach, how does longevity risk figure into our retirement and income plan?
This is the best of times and the worst of times, Adam. The longevity risk means we're going to live too long. But to me, every day I live is not too long.
Right, absolutely. Good.
So we want our money to outlive us. And unfortunately, many people I've seen, you out there listening, maybe one of them, your money is not designed to outlive you. You might outlive your money, and that's not what we want to have happen. Because when we get to that day after you run out of money, it's not going to be a fun time. So let's design a plan that guarantees you'll never run out of money. We call it the GPI plan, Growth Protection Lifetime Income. For the next 10 people, this is a golden ticket, Adam. $1,000 value, we're going to do it at no cost or obligation.
And all you have to do is call. We make it so easy. Would you like financial independence into your retirement and beyond it? 800-661-7383. That golden ticket is a $1,000 value. Or you could text Adam to 21000 for Coach Pete DeRuiter.
All right, Chip Patterson of CBSSports.com, Cover 3 podcast moderator. With 3-5-5 being the law of the land now in the ACC for football scheduling, wouldn't it be a good idea for them to modify the way they schedule in basketball? I know we already stack them one through and the schedules are rotated, but I think they should just take control, like manually do the schedule. Don't have a formula. Make the schedules that are great for television and create better matchups so you get more games that have more meaning. I just think that there's so many games. You have the safety of numbers. You don't have to worry about one team having a tougher schedule than anybody else.
Isn't the so how many ACC basketball programs and how many ACC basketball games do you think really qualify for that elite kind of status? Because the league is huge,
right?
And while we can look at the individual programs, some of the head coaches, some of the success that the ACC has had, you know, with a few teams making a deep run in this past NCAA tournament and other years where you're able to really beat your chest at the league office about how many teams are in the NCAA tournament. If we're going to talk about like true, like entertainment value, bringing some buzz, I think that it is in college basketball as a whole.
Yes.
I think it is limited. And I think that in the ACC specifically, you know, you're talking about matchups that involve only a couple teams per year, and I don't have last year's schedule in front of me.
Nor do I.
I believe they kind of do. I mean, we don't have a lot of scenarios where there are two awesome, high-profile, gotta-see-it ACC basketball games on a Saturday. It feels like they always slot it for, what is it, that 6 p.m. Eastern time tip-off on
yes.
ESPN. Like that, we trot through the Big 12 and we trot through maybe an AAC bridge game at 2, but Duke UVA 6 p.m.
Yep.
UNC Duke 6 p.m.
Duke Florida Ooh. State, right? Yeah.
Yeah. Like I think that the ACC probably does a good job of at least spreading those high profile games throughout the calendar so that we don't have any weekend Saturday in the college basketball season that is without the kind of marquee event that is going to get that ESPN primetime kind of treatment.
So we have experts, whoever those experts might be. I'm not professing to be one, but there are people within the league that we think these teams are going to be good. These are like, we think these will be our four best, and these are two or three or four teams that we think could push them. There's always going to be an outlier. There's always going to be somebody that surprises us. And last year is a terrible example because it was a bad year across the board in the league. But for the most part, I think they have a pretty good idea who's going to be good. I would simply make sure that those teams played each other on a regular basis.
With like a home and away.
Yes.
Like, don't have it be a one-off. Let's make sure that we get two Duke-Virginia games every single season. Let's make sure that with Florida State, especially where it is right now under Leonard Hamilton, that Florida State, the new blood, gets two shots against the blue bloods, and it's not just one of those two games. I see what you're saying.
That's what I think the league should do. First of all, it's better for the teams up top. Like, this would have been better probably, obviously they got hot at the end, but this would have been better for UNC, right? This would have been better for any of the better teams to play more games against better competition. If we're going to base so many things on quad one or quad two, then we should create more quad one and quad two opportunities and then allow just the gaudy, and I would do the same thing because I think it benefits the bottom and the middle as well. Then you can create maybe the illusion of having better teams at the bottom by, oh my gosh, this team went 21-9, even though they didn't beat anybody good, but they went 21-9. Maybe they get in and get to a first four. So I just think that there's some manual things they can do rather than say, this is our formula, and we're kind of stuck with it. To me, it's always been, you know, a possibility, but they've never done it.
So there's the way that I have heard it proposed, and all this stems from this most recent basketball season when so many non-conference games were able to spring up out of nowhere and they were able to organize it. I mean, something you can't do in college football because of the logistics of getting an entire team and support staff. You know, if we can find a gym, we can get all of our guys there and, you know, maybe we can sell some tickets. I think that the fun conference-centric argument would be to take a weekend and say, all right, everyone's playing on this weekend.
Oh, that'd be great.
Don't know against who. And you sell that the way that you sell the ACC Big Ten Challenge. You sell that the way that you sell the midseason SEC Big 12 Challenge. And maybe that midseason SEC Big 12 Challenge is a way that the ACC even counter programs it, where on that same weekend, we don't even know until there's some draw or some big some announcement show. And like you said, maybe it's not random. You know, maybe there is a little bit of, we are going to go ahead and have the best teams play against each other because that creates more quad one opportunities. But all of this stems from the idea that you can schedule late into the game in college basketball in a way that you cannot with so many team sports all across college sports, especially when it comes to comparing it to football. I think that having non-conference, you know, late in the game matchups put together that put good teams against good teams would make for a great thing for college basketball. But for a conference to block off an entire weekend and say that between Saturday and Sunday, our entire conference is going to play and you cannot play an opponent for a third time because there's no way you go into a season without having Carolina and Duke playing each other twice, for example. But you can't play an opponent for the third time, but we're going to put you against another similarly good team, tournament bound or not, based on you only playing them once. I think that would be a fantastic idea. And again, my suggestion is to put it there January, February, maybe even counter program the Big 12 SEC Challenge, because while the ACC Big 10 Challenge, we are used to that as being a kind of an unofficial start, especially with football recently in the rear view. For NCAA tournament and bubble purposes, I do think the Big 12 SEC Challenge gets a little bit more juice.
Yeah, look, you can even do that for the entire final week of the regular season. You can make this a big deal because as we get to the end of the season, everything takes on more meaning. One quick thing, and then I'll ask you a question about Pumpkin Ridge. Does it matter where the conference's headquarters are, really?
For $1,500, y'all can come work here. I've got a spacious office. We can have Kevin over there. We can have Jim over there. Amy can have my desk, right? I don't know if she's really running the show anyway.
Right.
But, yeah, I do think that there is a little bit of a networky aspect to this where being in the same place as the stadiums, the sports consortiums, and this, that, or the other, I understand that. And I understand that Charlotte Douglas versus PTI is a very different, you know, playing situation. And goodness, travel seems tough enough as it is right now. So you might as well, you know, give yourself as many chances as possible going to one of the hubs of the Southeast. But in terms of, you know, do I, as a North Carolina resident, think the ACC's headquarters being in the state of North Carolina benefits me? No, I do not.
Yeah, I've argued that we should just get the greatest RV ever, and Jim Phillips can be driven around the ACC footprint, and headquarters happens to be where they wake up in the morning.
Wasn't that listening tour? I imagined the listening tour as a Madden-style bus.
Absolutely.
Getting on it and taking on all across the ACC footprint.
Today, headquarters is Charlottesville. Tomorrow, it's Chestnut Hill. It doesn't matter.
There is an advantage to just being around some of those like business people, some of those people within the community, when you are going to be leaning on them for some breaks, when you are going to be leaning on them for the advantages that you would need to have that football championship be there, to utilize the ballpark for the baseball tournament. I mean, there's a lot of activity around the Charlotte area where just having those relationships by proximity is going to end up work coming in handy.
Maybe it does, but I mean, I think if they want to have the association with the league, they're going to have the association with the league. If their headquarters are in Atlanta, or if their headquarters are in Charlotte, or if their headquarters are in New York.
It was not going to be in Orlando, right? I mean, we think...
Look, I wouldn't completely rule it out, but that's...
It's a little dicey in Orlando. I'm telling you, there's some university presidents that were like, nah, pass. we don't need to get involved in all those matters right
ESPN
now.
And Disney, I'm just saying.
True.
All right. I watched the press conference this morning from yesterday. I appreciate Brooks Koepka being honest when he said, look, my body's hurt. Like, he's barely played over the last 2 years. I appreciated Pat Perez saying today that, hey, man, it's a grind for me, basically, to finish in the top 125. This allows me to make a lot of money and not play a lot. Are live events exhibitions to you?
Yeah, absolutely. And guess what? I watched the match. You know,
Did you watch Josh Allen and?
Oh, I did not. But yeah. I said like I have watched the match.
Oh,
like
yeah,
I
okay.
have watched.
Yeah, I have too.
You know, right. You know, I've watched Brady. I've watched, you know, like all of these. Not all of them, but I've watched many of these events. The Slime Cup. Shout out to the Slime Cup.
The what?
You know, which by the way. Had an official, the Justin Thomas and Colin Morikawa, the Slime Cup.
What did I miss?
Oh my goodness.
Send me a link.
I will. Okay. it was a Nickelodeon golf event.
Oh my gosh. Send me a link.
Shout out to Paramount, Viacom, CBS, and all the company plugs I need to get in. But by the way, the Slime Cup had a higher official world golf ranking average than the Pumpkin Ridge event that's going on this weekend.
Pumpkin Ridge will have a better field than John Deere. Okay. So, I mean, John Deere's field is terrible. John Deere's field is worse than the Irish Open field this week.
If I am willing to watch all of these exhibitions, then like maybe I'm not planning to watch Pumpkin Ridge, but in terms of the general premise of, do you think that live golf 54 hole, no cut, limited field, shotgun start. Do you think it is an entertainment product? Do you think it is an exhibition? Yes. But if that's its cause, if that is its reason for existence, is to be entertainment and an exhibition, then I guess that, you know, that's fulfilling its purpose.
Yeah, look, I think the players are competing, but the way it's set up, it's not going to be taken seriously by the World Golf Rankings. And they need to understand that. And if they change the format, and I don't even care, shotgun start, whatever. It's different. To me, it's completely irrelevant.
I think it's a bad viewing product. I want to see
I don't know if leaders, it is or not.
I want to see the leaders play 16, 17, 18 in succession. I don't want to have the...
I agree with that.
I don't want to go to the... you know, second easiest hole on the course where the leader happens to be able to be getting a birdie right at the end because it's their 18th hole.
Right.
Because you're almost never, but at many golf courses, you're not going to find your easiest holes on the course at 16, 17, 18.
Rounds 1 and 2, shotgun start. Round 3, traditional way of finishing a golf tournament would be better for that golf tournament. But I think the shotgun start for the first two rounds, the fact is that it's that 54 holes is just not going to be taken seriously.
Right.
I don't care about no cut. There are plenty of events on the PGA Tour that have no cut.
Yeah, so, we've made fun of the world, the WGCs, yeah, for being free world ranking points. Like, you just need to get into them so that you can continue to boost your ranking. And that has been something that I've agreed with for a long time. But the idea that a 13th place finish in a 54-hole event is the same as a 13th place finish in a 72-hole event is... That just cannot count one for one when it comes to the world ranking.
All right, final thing, and this is not about LIV. This is about the DP World Tour, the old European Tour. They've essentially admitted the truth out loud. The way it's structured now, and people are mad about this, but we all have all known that this is true for a long time, is that they are now a feeder tour for the PGA Tour. The top 10 finishers on the European Tour will advance, have the option anyway, to advance to the PGA Tour, get tour cards. I have no problem with this because the best players in Europe have been coming over and playing the PGA Tour forever. So suddenly now, because it's in the rules, now people are going, well, we're just saying that we're not as good a tour. Yeah, that's been the case for 30 years.
At the risk of nuking us here in injury time, do you think that LIV will try to buy the DP World Tour?
I think they have. They've tried to. I think this agreement, which includes more money from the PGA Tour to the DP World Tour to prop it up, has gotten in the way. It's
right.
gotten in the way. At some point, this will be called PGA Tour Europe.
Right. And we are very much like not awarding, you know, great praises for the PGA Tour bosses and, you know, the headquarters.
Nope.
But it was a good break that the DP World Tour has decided to increase its partnership with the PGA Tour versus what was probably an option from LIV
to buy
the tour outright.
Just to flat buy it, and I think they tried to. Chip Patterson, you're the man. Talk to you next Wednesday. Actually, I won't talk to you next Wednesday. Hayes will talk to you next Wednesday.
Sounds good. Y'all be well.
Take care. Chip Patterson, he is the best.
Over the crossbar, and the Hurricanes have won the Stanley Cup.
June 19, 2006, but it all started May 6, 1997 with the announcement that the Hartford Whalers were coming to North Carolina. It's a story of transition, of heartbreak, of figuring it out on the fly. The Canes Corner look at the 25th anniversary of the move. Presented by the Aluminum Company of North Carolina. Listen now. Find Canes 25th Anniversary wherever you get your podcasts.
This is the portion of the program where we try to help you get ahead of the monthly obligations. Sports wagering might not be legal, but it's cool. We're doing it anyway, even though we're just playing for units. That's because that's all we can do here in the state of North Carolina until the General Assembly gets off their ass. All right, Dennis, let's place bets.
Place your bets. Here we are.
I bet you slice into the woods $100.
Gambling is illegal at Bushwood, sir, and I never slide.
Death! Okay, you can owe me. I owe you this.
I won both my tennis wagers yesterday.
Yeah.
Serena Williams and Harmony Tam going in. I just needed a tiebreak at some point. Serena losing a third set tiebreak. She was ahead 4-0, 4-love in the tiebreak, and ended up losing. And I had Steve Johnson to beat a Brit who played collegiately in the United States at the University of Memphis, Peniston or something like whatever his last name was. So I had Steve Johnson at plus money. So I picked up, enough. I like a little over 300, 375.
All right.
Actually, 374. I just rounded up because I have to do the math, and the math sucks. So I just rounded up a dollar. Or, I'm sorry, one unit. So I'm at plus 3410. All right, Dennis, you're up. I have two more tennis plays today.
All right. Well, I'm going to go Major League Baseball to kick things off.
All right, good.
L.A. Dodgers, Colorado Rockies. I'm going to go back to this game.
Sure.
I'm going to bet that the first scoring play, doesn't matter either team, the first scoring play will have two runs.
Oh, really?
Yes. We'll have two runs. It's a plus 370. So it could be a two-run homer. Could be a double that knocks in two runs.
Sure.
Two runs, first scoring play, plus 370.
Which game is this again?
Dodgers and Rockies.
Dodgers and Rockies.
They're playing in Colorado. That's got to mean something.
Yeah, I had a bad feeling about the Dodgers yesterday in Denver.
Thanks for letting me know.
Well, I mean, I sort of said it.
Kind of.
But, yeah, kind of. I'm looking for a good, like an international soccer play that tickles my fancy, but I can't figure out one. So we're going to start with Major League Soccer.
Okay.
My first foray into Major League Soccer.
All right.
Give me FC Cincinnati at home to outright beat NYCFC. FC Cincinnati at plus 235.
Okay. I got nothing.
Oh, well, look, NYC, was it NYC? No, it was LAFC that signed Gareth Bale. That's a big deal.
Sure. Who?
You don't know who Gareth Bale is?
I might.
He had been a star for Real Madrid for a long time.
Oh.
He's only 32.
Oh, yeah, him.
He didn't play a lot this year.
Yeah.
But Gareth Bale is a good signing for Major League Soccer. Okay. They need to bring over... Like, I know you don't know these people, just like I don't know McKenzie.
Mekhi Montgomery.
Montgomery, sorry. It's a former guest on the show.
Yeah.
Never come on again. I mean, I don't know who these people are, right? Okay. But, like, if you're a soccer fan, you know who Gareth Bale is.
Okay.
So, MLS needs some star power. Like, it was a cool thing when David Beckham came over here and put his name on the roster of the LA Galaxy, even if he didn't play a lot.
definitely put his name on there.
Hey, Wayne Rooney did that. Terry Henry did that. It's important that these guys come over here and play. It's not the best soccer league in the world, but it's the United States. It's a high-profile thing. So good for Gareth Bale, who will probably only be here for 1 year. All right, you go.
All right, I'm going to go to Wimbledon. I have no idea who either of these guys are.
It's a D. It's not
Wimbledon.
A T. Wimbledon.
Wimbledon.
D, not a T.
Sure. Give me Jensen Brooksby.
I have no idea who that
over
is.
Over Benjamin Bonzi.
Oh, really?
Brooksby over Bonzi. I just love the names. Plus 125.
All right.
Give me Brooksby.
Ooh, it's a close one.
Yeah.
All right. I'm going to Wimbledon as well. I was going to do – I thought John Isner and Andy Murray was not going to start until after we started this segment. I liked Isner at plus 220. Right now, Isner, who took the first set from Andy Murray, it's minus money. I'm not taking Isner as favorite. So I'm just going to, you know, in the back of my head, know that I liked Isner as an underdog to Andy Murray. We're going to go in the men's draw. This is tomorrow morning early. Liam Brody, who is a Brit.
Okay.
Ranked, I don't know, like 135 in the world. Diego Schwartzman is from Argentina, and he is, I think, the 12th seed. I'm going to take Brody to upset Schwartzman at plus 240.
Never underestimate the power of the Schwartzman.
yes. May the Schwartzman be with you.
Yes.
All right, you're up.
All right, I'm going to pull a page out of your book. I'm going USL Soccer.
All right, good.
Because why not?
USL Soccer, that's good.
USL Championship. Rio Grande Valley takes on El Paso Locomotive. Great name, by the way.
El Paso Locomotive
FC. That's a cool name.
Yeah.
Draw plus 250.
Draw plus 250. All right. I wanted to take Harmony Tam to beat Serena Williams, but I can't bet against Serena Williams. Harmony Tam was the winner of that match, but I'm going to ride Harmony Tam for one more.
Oh, okay.
Okay. I will take Harmony Tam. Who's she playing? I don't know who she's playing.
Doesn't matter.
But Harmony Tam at plus money. And again, I didn't write that down, but I'll figure that out in a minute. But I'll go Harmony Tam to win her next match.
This is the Adam Gold Show.
Over the crossbar, and the Hurricanes have won the Stanley Cup.
June 19, 2006, but it all started May 6, 1997 with the announcement that the Hartford Whalers were coming to North Carolina. It's a story of transition, of heartbreak, of figuring it out on the fly. The Canes Corner look at the 25th anniversary of the move. Presented by the Aluminum Company of North Carolina. Listen now. Find Canes 25th Anniversary wherever you get your podcasts.